Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Steph, and this is the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast. I'm recording this shortly after Mother's Day here in the UK, and I'm going to be honest, my family completely failed to say or do anything the morning of Mother's Day. I sent a message to Doug, who had left early to referee a rugby match, along the lines of no bastard, and I use a punchier word than bastard, has even made me a cup of tea. And I think it's indicative of my role in the family to cajole and make things happen. And I hadn't, because I suppose I saw it as kind of a day off and felt like it was a bit lame if I had to tell them all to say nice things and get them to make me a cup of tea. And the idea of roles in the home brings me on nicely to our guest today, which is Eve Rodsky. I was really excited about this one, slightly creepily so, because I've been a big fan of Eve for a while, but this recording was in the diary for months. Eve is a very busy woman. She counts Reese Witherspoon among her fans. And if you've been at all interested in how to try and find a more equal partnership at home, her name will have most definitely come up. Eve is the author of Fair Play. And Fair Play is a system that tackles the mental load and helps you put a kind of structure in place in your home. If you often feel resentful, like you're juggling this huge volume in this manic rush hour, and perhaps you're unfairly carrying more than your partner and it causes rows and resentment, where you're not on your own, relationships are really hard, and trying to navigate this isn't something most of us have considered before moving in with someone, having families. But we talk about how this goes way beyond household chores and nagging, the toll this takes on women's health, on relationships, its impact on massive things like the pay gap, and also why should men get engaged with this, and what do you say to them to get them to come to the table, as Eve says. This episode is sponsored by gifting experience website The Inditute, and I'll tell you a bit more about them shortly. Before we crack on, a couple of things. There's a mower or something that goes off towards the end of the episode, but don't worry about that. And also, she discusses someone that's emailed her and was very clear we bleep out their name for confidentiality. So just to be clear that that's what happens. Also, after you've listened, I really recommend reading Eve's book. I'll link to it in the notes. But as I mentioned, I used to have the shouty conversation where I knew we weren't getting this sharing business right, but both of us were also tied up in what we thought we knew as roles for men and women. And it's a big deal to try and do it differently. So don't maybe feel that you've got to listen to this, and if this is a new kind of concept, that you then go and immediately sort it. But as we say, it takes a bit of understanding, I think, first, and reading Eve's book will really help. Right, so let's go. Here is the excellent Eve Rodsky. So I wanted to start with how much you thought about how you and Seth, your husband, ran your household when you were first together, before Fair Play, before children.
Oh my God, Steph. we never thought about it.
You didn't.
Never. Never in a million years. I mean, that's the biggest irony of this all, right? Is that I create systems for a living. And even my Aunt Marion's Mahjong group had more, you know, systems than my home, right? You don't bring snack twice to her Mahjong group and you're out. But my home was like everybody else's home, as one man said. You know, his home is one where they wait to decide who's taking the dog out every single night, right? When it's about to take a piss on the rug. It's amazing to me that I would not be working for you if I walked into your office and said, "Hey, Steph, what should I be doing today? I'm going to wait here every single day to tell me what to do. We would laugh at that and say we would fire that person immediately. But that's the partnership that we have in our most important organization. So it makes no sense, which is why I think fair play is not rocket science, but we'll explain why it's so triggering, even though it should be so easy, Steph. It should have been so easy for me to present a system for home management for people to just adopt, but it was not so easy, I found out. But we'll get back to that. But what you're asking me is whether I thought of the home as an organization when I started this work. And the answer is absolutely not. I was one of those women. One woman said to me what Fair Play taught her was that she doesn't have a magical vagina that whispers in her ear what her husband's mother wants for Christmas. And Steph, I legitimately thought I had a magical vagina when I started this.
And you don't.
No, my vagina is completely ordinary.
That's a shame. But I think, exactly the same. It wasn't an issue. And also, a lot of this, when you start looking in the detail about what we intrinsically believe growing up because of what we see, what society teaches and all that stuff, I fell into and thought I wanted actually like quite a caring role. So I've said before that I used to make my husband's packed lunches and iron his shirts. I mean, yes, this is pre-kids, yes, but out of a gesture of love, because I kind of thought, well, that's what you do. And he wasn't sitting there with a beer in his hand and is waiting for a slipper. Like, it wasn't like that, but I just was doing that. And it was when kids then came along, I was like, oh, hang on, this feels horrific and I'm exhausted. And I can't do this. So you described that when you had a family, the change was that you felt abandoned by pretty much everyone.
Absolutely. So I write about this in Fair Play, and you are so beautifully, thank you for being a cultural warrior and sharing these messages. But I think some of this work does deserve a trigger warning, because it sounds like we're here talking about housework and chores, but it's much deeper than that, Steph, as you know. This is about our existential abandonment and our identity. And in fact, as I've interviewed thousands and thousands of women now in over 16 countries, and the two most common words that I hear from women after children are that they feel overwhelmed and bored. And so those are really two contradictory feelings, you would think. You know, at least if you're overwhelmed, you should feel excited. Or if you're bored, you should feel calm. But it doesn't work that way. And that's sort of where I was after my second son, Ben, was born. I talk about how my husband, Seth, sends me this text: I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries. And I think what was existential to me about that text, I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries, was the context. Because if we all just say those things but don't give context, it sounds like we're complaining, or, you know, what do you have to be complaining about? Your husband makes your life, or you're so lucky you're even partnered and it could be worse. But existentially, I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries was a time where I had a newborn baby in the home. I had a toddler. I was negotiating my way back to the workplace and feeling completely abandoned by my job, who told me I couldn't come back with any direct reports. I wasn't going to be able to to pump, because there was no room for it. I would have to, there was one broom closet that I could use, but there was no outlet, so I'd have to bring a battery pack for my pump. So completely abandoned by my workplace, abandoned by society pretty much, because I'm not someone who has parents. I'm a product of a single mother. My father's been in and out of my life. My mother still works. I didn't have any village that was going to come and help me. And so the only thing I had was waiting for school to start. And when I get to that school, they give me a name tag that says Zach's mom, right? These people that are supposed to help me. Staff don't even know my fucking name. And so that's the day I was at that toddler transition program wearing the Zach's mom tag, while also being completely abandoned by my workplace, telling me I can't come back in the same role. And on top of that, Seth sends me this text: I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries, when I'm in the car with a diaper bag and a breast pump and gifts to return for a newborn baby in the back of my car. And he's basically saying I'm the fulfiller of his smoothie needs. That's sort of the context for this breakdown, this blueberries breakdown I had. And it was, it felt existential, meaning that this was going to be not just a straw that breaks the camel's back, but a like, it felt like a break in the road, almost like the Robert Frost poem. Like, which road are you going to take? The road not taken, the road taken. It felt bigger than just that day. And that's why it's sort of become a core memory. And I write about it.
Because I think, like you mentioned, it could be initially when you start having these conversations, hearing this, like, oh, well, it's, this is just women nagging a bit.
Right. Totally. Yes. What are you complaining about? So what? Just pick up the blueberries.
Yeah. Like, what? What's it to you? All right, I'll pick them up. It's that kind of response. Right. But the scale of this, because, and this is where this gets my juices going, because when you, there's loads of talk in the UK and I'm sure everywhere else, but about like the pay gap. And as I run a business, so there's talk about the lack of investment in female run businesses and all these things. It's like, but for me, I really truly believe that the balance, the imbalance at home is responsible for nearly all of those things. It's not just
100%.
About men. Right. Say it, sis. But it's not just about men, you know, middle-class white men who aren't putting money. It's not just about that. That's a part of it. But it's because if you're always the default or she-fault, as you say, parent, if you're the one that has to be on those pickups, if you're the one that's that has to work the flexible hours and all of those, that huge long list of things that mean that you can have a family, or you don't work, how can you be equal in the boardroom or in the meetings or any of those things? Because you just can't, you can't be present. And that's not before your brain's, you know, physically is an issue, but also your brain is somewhere else.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's the key, right, Steph, is that this is the last frontier of feminism.
Yeah.
In the 1970s, we did make a lot of strides to the point where I'm Gen X and I came into the workplace not thinking about these issues, as you just said earlier. Like, did you think about these issues? Because I was told, along with my generation, that these problems for women had been fixed because we were allowed access to money. We didn't have to use a father or a husband to get access to a credit card. We were able to enter the workplace on the same trajectory as men, which was a lie, that we were graduating at the same rates from college as men. What was interesting about this last frontier feminism is that it's so insidious. It's so close to our homes. It's so close to our hearts that we ignored it. And then what I started to realize as after the blueberries breakdown, I'm a lawyer. I believe in behavior design. And that's why I went to law school, because I believe that lawyers are the ones who can design how society behaves, AKA if you want people to stop at a stop sign, what you're going to do, right, is you're going to pass a law to have them stop at a stop sign, right? You want more people to vote, you pass a law, election day will become a holiday. You know, these, I believe that lawyers, not psychologists, not sociologists, even though they're very important, and believe me, I use, we have many in our system, but I believe that lawyers at the end of the day are the ones responsible for really how society behaves. And so I felt that as a lawyer who was fed up in their own relationship, I had a unique perspective, not the only perspective, right? Psychologists definitely have a perspective, of course. So do sociologists. That's who I learned from. But I could look at this through a different lens of behavior design, because that's what, you know, what would it look like if I passed laws that made it so that this last frontier of feminism, that women do 2/3 or more of what it takes to run a home and family, wasn't happening? Because what happens, Steph, as you said, is this one statistic that women shoulder the unpaid labor of the home, which is often called invisible work, second shift, emotional labor, mental load. It has different names, but it's the same concept that we shoulder unpaid labor for society. And what that allows is it allows society to pay us less. It allows society to believe that all women are going to become mothers, even if we're not, so that we are considered not serious. We're not in line for the big promotions. It allows women to even if you're in the corporations, to be in the emotional labor roles of lawyer, like, don't police you, don't do that. Or HR manager, which is the chief people officer, never managing the P&Ls. All of these issues that we see in the workplace stem from these magical vagina assumptions around the home. And so I felt that if I could tackle that, then that could be a big contribution to these other issues, AKA the pay gap.
There will be some people that hear it and think, but women are born better yes. at multitasking and caregiving and the maternal instinct that means that we are the ones that has to be there. And that feeds into mum guilt, which I think is one of the worst or cleverest things that's ever been invented.
Yes.
But you had a conversation with a neuroscientist on this, right? I'm sure you've had multiple conversations with neuroscientists.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about, this is the dark part, but as one man said to me, Eve, you go really dark to go light. So let's pretend this is like a rainbow and we're going to come to the end of the rainbow. And to get to the end of the rainbow, we can say there's a lot of darkness in the beginning of realizing these assumptions, right? That somebody, all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're the fulfiller of someone's smoothie needs. You're the only one noticing, you know, that there's been a basket of laundry on the stairs for 2 weeks. The schools call you and your kids are sick and you're, you know, in a pickup line, you know, interrupting your workday, right? These are like sort of the death by a thousand cuts. But here's the thing, Steph. So let's just break this down because I think it's really important. There is a secret formula. So we are fighting, let's just say, right, the U.S. is worse than the U.K., but in all countries, we could do better to serve working families, always. So let's just say that we're fighting for those systemic issues to make things better for working families. That doesn't mean that we can wait and do nothing until those policies are passed. We can't, if their air is polluted, I'm not going to tell you not to breathe. That's not the solution. The solution is you breathe the polluted air and then we try to make the air less polluted. So the good news is that you can take agency in your own home, as Steph has done, to practice fair play. And what is the practice of fair play? It's a secret formula of three things. It's boundaries, systems, and communication. That's the secret formula. It came from my practice of building organizations. As I said earlier, I'm a behavior designer for organizations by trade. I work with family businesses and family foundations that look like the HBO show Succession. And your listeners should feel bad for me. But the idea is that successful organizations have boundaries, systems, and communication. So when I decided to become my own client, and say to Seth, I'm not going to live this way, and start to design a system that would work in the home. And that's really what fair play is, right? It's a system of ownership. It teaches you how to divide up the domestic workload. And it's not rocket science. It's just very similar to how the workplace works, where we call that the directly responsible individual, where somebody who owns a task, whether it's extracurricular sports, cook dinner for the night, they own that task from start to finish, right? So extracurricular sports means not just showing up at the Little League field. It means you're on an 85-person text chain for who's getting your kids to practice. You're ordering equipment on the websites. You're returning the equipment when it doesn't fit. You're serving your kids' friends for what sport they want to play. We call that conception, planning, execution. That's the ownership mindset. There's 100 fair play tasks, and you own cards. So it's not about 50-50, it's about fairness. It's a very easy system. So Steph, when I designed the system in 2012 to say, here's the 100 cards, you're gonna own the different cards, you're gonna do this just like the workplace. Why did it not work? Why have I had to be on the podcast circuit for 8 years, right? Yeah. 8 years. At this point, you know, 5 since my book was released, convincing people to even get to the table. It's because the secret formula is not just systems, it's boundary systems and communication. So this gets back to, this is a long answer to your question about what do we say to ourselves that breaches our own boundaries? I can't get people to the table, Steph, to use the system because of the boundaries issue. Women have been conditioned since birth to say to themselves four things. They say to themselves, one, my husband makes more money than me. So I can't ask him to come to the table to help with any of these 100 unpaid labor cards, aka extended family, gestures of love for my kids, purchasing gifts for my kids, helping them answer hard questions, holiday cards. I mean, you could just keep on going. There's 100 of them.
There's 100, yeah.
So that's one thing. Then number two, they also say to me, my job is more flexible. Unfortunately, women who are doctors, this is a study, showed that when they were married to lawyers, they said their job was more flexible. You switched it and the women were lawyers, the men were doctors. Guess what? They said their job was more flexible. Number three, women said to me, in the time it takes me to tell him, her, they, what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm centering women married to men because that's where these problems come. I should just do it myself. And finally, they said to me, Steph, what you just said. There's a maternal instinct. I'm wired differently for multitasking and for care. That one was the hardest and most depressing one because I've known since 2012 that there's no gender difference at all in the brain for how we multitask or how we task switch. It's just cultural conditioning that women should, to have it all, you need to do it all. Mm-hmm. If you've ever said one of those messages to yourself, when women identified in a survey that they had said one of those messages to themselves, Steph, they also were the ones who identified that it was going to be much harder to come to the table to demand that they implement a system for change in their home. Long answer, but that is ultimately the answer that I wanted to give.
I had a conversation with someone the other day, and bearing in mind, I've obviously been reading and listening to you and all these things. And they were talking about packing to go away. And she was saying she was really stressed, which most women I know are before going away. And they're thinking of all the things and they're remembering all. And it's the detail of, I've got to have those new toys or a new book or thing for the kids because I've got to keep them entertained and it's going to be tricky on the flight or whatever.
Oh, yes.
And this person said, well, and she was saying that she did all this stuff. And I was like, no, you need to stop. And I was kind of trying to tell her, why is he not doing anything? And she was like, no, but I'm a control. Her response was, I'm a control freak.
I'm a control freak, right.
And I prefer to do it. But she was also really resentful of her partner. So you're like, that's not working, is it? Like,
no, she doesn't prefer it. Let me just say this very, very important thing. That was also my toxic time message. Of all the messages, the four messages we just told you that breach your boundaries so that you won't come to the table to implement the fair play system, that was mine, Steph. Mine was, I'm a control freak, right? I would never allow Seth to do that. You know, he would forget, you know, Ben's inhaler and Ben couldn't breathe. Yeah. You know, all these things I would say to myself to catastrophize and explain why Seth wasn't coming to the table to help me. So one day when I sat down with one neuroscientist, God bless him, he is a very, very, very powerful and important neuroscientist that I had access to because of my clients. Their family foundation gave him a chair. So he sat down with me and gave me an hour for fair play for the book. And this was probably like 2015. And I said to him, or no, maybe even earlier, but anyway, he said to me, I sat him down and I said, I really need to understand this idea of, you know, women and why we're better multitaskers. I didn't even ask if we're better multitaskers at that point. Why are we better multitaskers? You know, what is this gender difference in the brain so that, you know, I am the one who, as you said, am the control freak who prefers to do, you know, all of this packing for my children. So this neuroscientist looks at me and he says, I'm confused. Are you here to ask me cultural questions? Because I'm not a sociologist. Or are you here to ask me actual neurobiological questions, you know, questions about the brain? I said, I'm here to ask you questions about the brain. So he said to me, as we said earlier, there's no difference in our ability to manage those details, to know you need Ben's nebulizer, to pack the extra toys, right? There's no difference in how our brain retains any information from a gender perspective, especially not in the home. And in fact, we know from gay fathers that the maternal instinct is there right away because they gain oxytocin the same way mothers do. So it's not a gender thing. It is, but what he did say to me is he's like, but I want to just say as an aside, if you're asking me whether it makes sense for men to convince women that they prefer to wipe asses and do dishes, then absolutely, because why would I break that stereotype that you prefer to wipe asses and do dishes? Because then I get my free time to get tenure, to work out, to play golf. Of course I want you to take pride in wiping asses and doing dishes. And I started crying. I started, I mean, it was sort of stereotypical, or I'm like the woman crying in his office, but I started to cry. It was very hard for me to hear that.
And it's massive because I think, especially if you've gone into a relationship, you've got married because you fell in love and you think this person is a great guy, and they are a good guy. Yes. The thing is, it's probably important to mention, because it's not about bashing men, because in the same way that we've been conditioned to think that this is our role and this is what we should be doing, they've been conditioned to think the same. So they're not doing it because they're evil or bad people. I mean, some might be, but I suppose there's hope there in that if they've been conditioned to believe that, then if you can have these conversations and if they do love you and do want to have a future with you, then they're going to have to take some of this on, right?
Well, I think that's what's so important. Fair play became a love letter to men. It really did, because the boxes that women are in, and again, why are we centering women married to men? Well, that predominant configuration is what's causing all these assumptions that, as I said earlier, affect all these other areas like our pay gap. Even if you're not married to a man, unfortunately, you're still subject to these pay gaps, right? Because ultimately, right now, the top 1% of who holds wealth in the world are still white men with stay-at-home wives, right? That's still the predominant configuration of power. So that's why we're trying to break this down. And Fair Play became a real love letter to men, because as much as, Steph, I feel overwhelmed and bored and sick, because that's another problem, right? That if you don't believe this is important, what we're starting to see over time, because now I've had data since 2012, right? So I have 10 years of data. We're starting to see that women who shoulder a supermajority of the Fair Play cards and work outside of the home are getting really sick. They're getting insomnia. They're using SSRIs for anxiety. Their hair is falling out. We're seeing autoimmune diseases at insane rates. It's very dire out there. It's very important to get this right. It's your mental and physical health. But the thing about the other flip side for men is that when you and I'll give the example of how the Fair Play system was ultimately developed. It was developed not by asking, what if we treat our home as our most important organization? That was the initial question I asked, but that didn't have enough specificity. The real Fair Play system was developed because I asked a question that changed my life. And that question was, how did mustard get in your refrigerator? That question changed my life because all the time use data was way too generic. And by asking that question, I could really capture what was happening in the home. And again, in 16 countries, including Sweden, Norway, all these places we think are doing it well, it was the same. And it was that women were noticing that their second son, Johnny, liked yellow mustard only with his protein and wouldn't eat unless he had all of his good, healthy food doused in mustard. That's a phase that organizational managers like me call conception. Then I was the one who noticed that women were the ones saying that they get stakeholder buy-in for what their family needs on the grocery list. They didn't actually say stakeholder buy-in, but that's what I was listening for. And then they were the ones monitoring the mustard for when it runs low. And then I could say, ooh, I know that phase. That's planning. And then men, right? They are involved in domestic labor, but to the extent of going to the store to buy the mustard, right, Steph? And then they're bringing home spicy Dijon every fucking time, right? And we ask for yellow mustard. And I'm not going to trust my husband with my living will. This loser can't even bring home the right type of mustard,
the right? Mustard. Yeah.
And yeah. So that lack of accountability and trust, I think, is just as toxic for men. Because what men were saying to me was that when they're brought into execution with no conception and planning, with no context, they can't get anything right. Mm-hmm. And as somebody who has any, all of us who have an ego, who want to feel useful, the home is not a place where men told me they felt useful. And so they retreat slowly and slowly out of those experiences that makes them feel stupid, not useful, hurt. So it's much more than the mustard. And that is ultimately why men were some of the, ironically, the early adopters, really powerful men, became the early adopters, coaches, men in the military, Steph. They became the early adopters of fair play. So it became a love letter to men because they understood that as much as women feel overwhelmed, they don't feel psychologically safe in their home organization because they have no idea what to do because there's no context. So this moving to an ownership mindset actually helps both genders in that way.
The Inditu is not like the big boys of the experience gift world. Inditu experiences are all hand-picked, good value, and tried and tested by another female founder, Calypso Rose. Experiences are perfect for people that will enjoy getting out and trying something different, from glamping on a beautiful vineyard to foraging local oysters or afternoon cheese on a barge. How good does that sound? Finding that perfect gift experience and promising that time to spend with someone you care about is really rather special. Check out their fun website, inditute.com. That's inditute.com. Their novel ideas include experiences for couples as well as a category called Extraordinary Experiences. And use the code STEF10 for 10% off.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If your aim is to bring a partner on board and in this kind of quest for this more equal partnership, how do you show them that it's worth it before you can? Because as you said, it makes their life harder. Why would they? And my husband, Doug, quite early on in us starting these conversations, which, as I say, they're ongoing because I think they will be forever more. But he was like, it kind of was like a penny dropping when he realised that and could admit that and go like, this actually, you know, like if I have to say to my work, I'm going to be in at this time because I'm doing the drop off, or, you know, and has to ask for that flexibility that women have been doing forever.
Right.
That makes his life a bit harder. All those things make his life a bit harder. So So how do you get them on board? What are you promising them?
I'll answer from this one client who actually called me from a funeral, Steph. And I get calls from funerals a lot, sadly, but because people know I love data, so that they're willing to tell me anything and all that they see. And this one client who knew that of my book, is I still have clients as I was writing and still do, but he said, you know, I was at this funeral, my client, again, I work for these very, you know, prominent families. So this was another, not my client, but another of his friends who is very prominent in the telecommunications industry in the Pacific Northwest. And he was at his funeral and he said that they were sort of mulling around and his three daughters were wearing white. And they sort of all go up to the podium at the same time. And then they start to recite these like really intricate Dr. Seuss type poems that were rhyming and funny. And no one really understood what was happening. One daughter recited the first poem. The second daughter recited the second poem. And then the third daughter recited another funny rhyming poem. And then they all sort of came to the microphone and said, these were the poems our father wrote to us as our tooth fairy. And that was really the, like he said, it was like a mic drop, right? It was hard to come up and eulogize the man as sort of this telecommunications expert or even a groundbreaker, because at the end of the day, what people wanted to talk about were his poems and what he wrote to his daughters. And so there is no regret in any, there's never, 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 never in now over 10 years of doing this work where I see any man tell me that they regret entering the Fair Play system. I mm-hmm. don't see it. Assuming, right, that it's not too late. There are people who try to use Fair Play as a tool not to get divorced, but it is too late. And that is, of course, this is a tool that helps people when they're open and willing and not at resentometer 10.
Yeah.
But I see it all the time. I see the beauty of these really powerful men say to me that, you know, Eve, you've been saying that an hour holding my child's hand in the pediatrician's office is just as valuable as an hour in the boardroom. And I didn't believe you until I had to be there at that pediatrician's office, and how my son started to talk to me on the way home about fears and stories of his day that I never would have heard if I wasn't able to transport him back and go, you know, through a McDonald's drive-through and grab him a Happy Meal. Yeah. These are things that are our humanity, Steph, and men deserve the opportunity to contribute and be part of our stories and our storytelling and our humanity, right? Not just these, you know, tropes of men as breadwinners. And so this is a societal movement, sadly. Mm. It doesn't happen with one couple, but the more couples do this and practice it and falter and get back, the better. It's funny, I just got an email that I thought, you know, I'll just pull it up. I'm not going to give the name since I'm not going to violate confidentiality, but I just got this to my email, our info email. It said, "Dear Eve," or whoever may read this, "my wife and I have purchased your book, the audiobook, and the game cards. I have a simple question that may not have a simple answer. My wife and I are currently separated at her request. 83% of divorces are initiated by women, just FYI.
Yeah. Yeah.
Though we both still live in the same house. She wants to use Fair Play while we are separated. Can this be done?" By the way, yes, it can be, and we have a lot of data on that. "Is it possible?" So he writes that. He said, "Thank you for your time. I know you must be very busy. Thank you for your wonderful book. Very lovely." So we wrote him back saying we have a lot of resources for people who are co-parenting. So we gave them to him. And then he wrote back something that I thought was really beautiful and sad. "Thanks for your reply. I have a follow-up question. Have you gotten any feedback from these families indicating that Fair Play helped the separated couple to get back together? I guess I find myself helplessly hoping." Probably doesn't know what happened to him. And that's what makes me feel so sad for. I know as somebody who's been doing this for 10 years, what happened to. I can tell
in
you
most
without
cases,
knowing.
Right? Go on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But doesn't know. And that's unfair. And that's what fair play does. When you practice boundary systems and communication, you're not going to be in this man's situation.
When the kids started school, our eldest started school, and I was suddenly like, oh, panicked about how short the day is because it's way shorter than nursery here. And he started taking our son to school 2 days a week. He had to contact his boss and say, can I do this and everything? And they let him, and it was 2 days a week. Fine. But he did, in that I remember him starting to go like, it's actually really nice. Like I'm having time with him. Yes. So what you're saying is exactly right. But I suppose men have almost been conditioned not to look for that part of life in lots of ways. Like that it's just not part of what being a man is. It's not part of what, I don't know. But you don't need to, you could just turn up and pay the bills and sit at the end of the table. And it's like, that's not what this is for, is it?
It was our sitcoms. It was our sitcoms, right? If you look at sort of every sitcom that we watched in the 90s and the 2000s, there was a man who got like handed a paper or like a beer or was, you know, portrayed as completely incompetent and doesn't know how to put like a toilet paper roll back on the toilet. It's very essentialistic, you know, and sad, I think, for what we've done as a culture to minimize the home. And I think that, you know, it's so sad because these, you know, I'll give you an example, Steph. Let's just play. You know, this is a good way to sort of encapsulate what we're talking about today. I have 100 fair play cards here.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do with you right now, this is just, Steph doesn't know this is happening. We just decided to do this on the fly. But I'm just going to just shuffle through. And I want you just stop. Just tell me when to stop. I'm just going to keep shuffling.
Stop.
Okay. Ooh, this is a good one. This is the one you stopped on. Okay. Informal education kids. So this is what I want you to do. There's 100 cards. So we just picked one randomly. I want you to tell me if you can remember who taught you how to ride a bike or tie your shoe. Do you remember either of those experiences and what happened? Okay, tell me.
My dad on the bike and my mum with the shoes.
Okay, well, tell me about the bike riding. So when did you learn to ride a bike?
So we used to live, there was a car park opposite our house. It sounds very glamorous, doesn't it? and on a Sunday afternoon, it would be totally empty because that in those days, you didn't have shops open on a Sunday because I'm that old. And so we used to go over there with roller boots and bikes and like, I'm one of six. So there were hundreds of us. Yeah. So just chugging up and down on a Sunday afternoon.
What is your, what's your birth order?
I'm fourth.
Oh, you're fourth. So were there older siblings who
had
already riders or skateboarding or whatever?
And my brother Chaz, he would have had no hands. He would have been able to go up and down multiple times without ever touching the handlebars, which I was always quite jealous of.
Oh, amazing.
Is
Chaz still in your life?
Yeah, he works with me at Don't Buy Her Flowers.
No way. Oh, my God. Okay. So thank you for letting me do that. That was just really, really random. And what I like to do is count how many seconds that was. So that was about like 40 seconds. And I feel like I know more about Steph than listening to your podcast and actually this whole hour. Like, I feel like I just got a nugget of information about you that is so interesting. Like that your brother works with you, that you're one of six. All those other things are important. But these are little snippets of our humanity. And I think if we can realize that what these fair play cards are not just chores and housework, there are memories, there are building blocks, there are humanity. And I could just get that from you in 40 seconds, just one card, hearing one story from your childhood. If we can realize that, right, then that's the cultural movement. That's the change that will, I think, actually really stick in society, to understand that we have these things, as we said, that may, especially when men are hearing this for the first time, may feel defensive about because they think, oh, shit, this is making my life harder. You're asking me to do more, are actually the things years later that become our core memories. Literally, even like dishes. For me, some of my most core memories, Steph, are the Sunday nights I had to go to Pathmark, this sort of low budget grocery store in Chinatown with my mother, because that's when there was the sale on meat, and we would go on Sundays, and it was always freezing, in like the meat section. I just remember no matter what I wore, I was never warm enough for that grocery store with its lights. And my mother teaching me how to read unit prices, which were the pricing of by unit. So you can see actually, you know, ounce by ounce, which is cheaper. These are not just I have to pick up groceries. These are our humanity. And so I think the more that we see it that way, you know, things will change. And again, I love knowing that about you. It's not that I need to know that about Steph, but just I love knowing that in 1 minute I learned these amazing things about you that I feel like as one of six, I could understand you better as being the fourth in your birth order, right? That you get to, that you're still close to your older brother, that you have men in your life other than your husband. Like there's a lot of beauty in hearing just even these like small stories.
And just on the finance piece, because we mentioned that, but I think that's come up a lot of times whenever I've talked about this, especially if I'm talking to someone who is a stay-at-home parent, and they'll kind of go, oh, but I don't earn the money, so therefore I should do all of this stuff. What's your kind of one-liner to come back at that?
If you have ever thought, well, they make my life, right? I should do this all. I would say we have to just flip the entire script, because it's really that because you do this all, your partner can make money. There is absolutely no way, and we know this because one of my favorite subsets of people to interview, and again, this gets back to the funeral, like this is not morbid, it's important, but one of my favorite subsets was to interview men whose wives have passed away recently. Because what these men are saying to me when they have to enter care in a situation where their partner has passed away and they have children in the home under 18, is that they can't do it. They can't, they cannot continue to work as they have been working and raise their kids. It's impossible. So what that shows us, right, is that everything in the home organization is valuable. The money contributions are valuable, but what are equally valuable are the unpaid labor contributions. And actually, I would consider them more valuable because they're more risky, Steph. The person who takes on the unpaid labor contributions, it's much more risky, because if the person who makes the paid labor contributions leaves that home organization or wants to get out, they have a lot more power in which to leave, right? Because they can leave with skills to have monetary contributions. The person who has done the unpaid labor unfortunately has a lot less power in society. And so it's a much more risky job, which I would consider more valuable, because you have the risk associated with doing those unpaid labor tasks. And so I think we have to really just explain and change the entire paradigm of how we looked at only paid work is valuable. The unpaid labor is more than a full-time job. If you held all the 100 Fair Play cards, you'd be working in service of your home 3-4 hours after your partner went to sleep 7 days a week. It's just not a job of one person. We know this because in all of human history, human beings have been raising children in more of a commune environment. The nuclear family is a very, very strange invention that is contradictory to how we've lived for most of human civilization. So I would say that the entire paradigm of the nuclear family and of the breadwinner, non-breadwinner, scientifically, sociologically, and from a legal perspective, literally makes no sense. And so I don't even consider it anymore. Like if someone says that, I say like, come back to the table when those beliefs are gone, because I can't even go back to the beginning you'll have to do it for me. Because it's so frustrating to hear somebody say that they have to do this work because their partner gets paid. It literally, that paradigm makes no sense. And as you can tell, makes me so angry.
And what you're saying about how we place value on that productivity, because I know that as well, that you might get someone that says, I've heard partners say, well, I'd love to swap places. I'll stay at home and she can go to work. And it's it's completely under, and you're like, you're completely underestimating, and it's really devaluing, obviously, for the person, but you're underestimating what they're actually doing. So I suppose they're not there yet in order to even start this process, right?
They're going
to
end up like our friend who we had a bleep out.
This is where you go, how big is this? How serious is this? And you talk about the like divorce numbers going up, but also how many of them are triggered by women. And I feel really strongly that it's because women are getting to a point where they're going, fuck this shit, I'm better than this.
Totally.
I don't need this. And they don't need it because we can work and we can do all these things. And we're doing it all anyway. So
why not? Yeah. Why not do it without the expectation of the magical vagina, right? So I think it all comes back to the magical vaginas. But really the truth is that the really only way to end bias, we know this, and there's actually a really beautiful book called The End of Bias by a woman named Jessica Nordell that I think is a really beautiful read. But the only way to end bias is to move from assumption to structured decision making. That's really one of the best ways. And that's what ultimately the fair play movement is pushing people to do. Whether you use the cards or not, just understanding that there's a new way to understand that there this gendered assumption of who does what in the home does not have to be that way, that it can be moved to a different paradigm of a structured decision-making opportunity is I think very helpful. And again, it's why I've been able to capture so many men, because this is not a you do 50%, I do 50% system. This is a tool to say, whether you own one task of the 100 or 50, as long as both parties perceive it as fair, and that will shift over time, then that is fine. That is a structured decision-making tool because you've made decisions without assumption. That's all I want.
Okay, we know that lots of listeners to this podcast have found that menopause treatment is trial and error. And Moxie Coach believe that every woman has the right to be armed with the knowledge of what to expect and what's happening in their body. Moxie Coach is an app that predicts menopausal symptoms to give support and guidance using the most up-to-date research into symptoms and treatment to help women prepare for and manage menopause symptoms. You can sign up now to be part of their inaugural community by visiting the Moxie Coach website, moxiecoach.org, that's moxiecoach.org, and join hundreds of women to help improve the future of menopause treatment.
It'll be different for every couple, right? So I think it's important that it's not saying that you have to split it in half, because it will depend on what people do for their work, and it will change week by week. Like Doug goes away quite a lot, and they really recently realized, and this is I've got a 13-year-old as my eldest, and you know, we've been doing this a while. If on a Sunday, if he's going away on a Monday, if on a Sunday he can prepare a meal or something for that week and do the food shop, I am so much nicer and less resentful. But also it makes my week easier. So it's not just like, well, I'm going to work and I'm going to earn the money, so I'm leaving you, here you go. Because I think there was a bit of conversation. It was like, well, how do I participate? And I know friends who've got the same. How do I participate? I'm not there. I can't do it. It's like, there is so much you can do because we have these things called emails online shopping. But also, if you know you're going away, what can you do to prep for the week? Because that's Sunday when you've got that staring ahead. I've got 3 kids, that's a lot.
And that makes
a massive difference. A huge difference to how I feel and how he feels. And also, again, he gets to feel like he's still part of the family unit, even though he's swanning around in a hotel somewhere, obviously working very hard.
I love it. I love that. The assumption, right, that I'm completely free to do what I want because I have a stressful work trip, to a structured decision-making tool of when I work, And I travel for work, I own the groceries card and the school lunches for Tuesdays and Thursdays that are pre-packed in the refrigerator. That is exactly how we make these broader changes, by starting like that.
One of the things that's really important, I think, from your system, so you've got your 100 cards, is the minimum standard of care. Can you just explain that? Because I think, again, if you leap into this and you go, oh, I'm going to do these ones and I'm going to do these ones, you're going to be a bit fucked if you haven't worked out the minimum standard of care.
Absolutely. If I can trace back selling this book, Fair Play, there was a talk of releasing the fair play cards along with the book. And I was really worried about that, Steph, because no one had ever heard of fair play. They'd never seen an organizational system for the home. So what I was worried about was that people would just buy these 100 cards or see them on my website, because again, this is a movement. We want all the tools to be free. You can always find them, and I'm sure Steph will link to the website in the show notes. But you would go to these cards and you would just look at them and say, I do it all, like, fuck this. You have to, I'm done. You're taking the kids to school. I'm never doing it again, right? I was worried about unleashing consciousness without, you know, people understanding what the solution was.
Yeah, because there's going to be a phase of anger, right? If you first engage with this, for most women, I would say there's probably men probably feeling like they're being hard done by, but women feeling like, shit, what have I been doing for the last however many years?
That's right. So there is a unleashing consciousness without a solution can be a little bit dangerous. And so I didn't want the solution to just be the cards, because I thought that would be a scorekeeping tool and people would just say, like, I can't even go there. It's so triggering and painful. So actually, before the cards came out, for a year, we had the book out in the world, because the whole point is that if you just threw a card at somebody, it wouldn't work. It's just like it would just be a list, right? Lists alone don't work. I learned that the hard way, because this I write about in Fair Play. The Fair Play card started off as a should I do list that didn't help me at all, except for that it started this movement, but it didn't help me in my practicality with Seth. So what I realized was that back to that boundaries, systems, and communication formula, that the most important thing we're going to be communicating with each other is something we never talk about. And that's those stories I just told you that you just did for me earlier, right? How many times have we sat down and asked our partner who taught them how to ride a bike when they were a kid? When did they go grocery shopping? What grocery store did they go to? Were they involved in the shopping? What did it look like? What did holidays look like in their family? Who was the one that bought the gifts? Do you remember what the wrapping paper looked like? We think we know our partner so well, but actually we have very little of these conversations. Unfortunately, that's the most important conversation to have, because that informs the standards for how we do that work. If the standards are not addressed, then what ends up happening is that back to that magical vagina, the assumptions, women will end up taking it back and doing it all, because they will assume that their partner can't, their brain can't handle which type of mustard to buy, right? So we start to bring all those internalized excuses on ourselves, and then we repeat the cycle. So one of the most important things I can say is that before you start this beautiful exercise and entering the system, is you want to tell each other your stories. You want to do what Steph and I just did. You want to pick up the cards and say, tell me about birthday parties growing up. Did you plan your own birthday party? Did your parents plan a birthday party for you? Did you have celebrations in your home? Because it makes a really big difference in terms of the standards. So in my house, my father was not a big part of my life, and he was gone at three when I was three. And he didn't even have a birth certificate. He grew up so poor that they didn't even have birth certificates for him and his brother, who were born in the county hospital. He had an autistic brother that they didn't even know was coming behind him as a twin. He hated birthday celebrations. And so I remember my mother telling me that before they divorced, she tried to plan a first birthday party for me. And he's like, well, if you're gonna do that, then 100% it's on you. Like, I don't believe in a first birthday party, she's not going to remember it. Who cares? So his standard for a birthday party is not to have one. Her standard is to celebrate my first birthday in all of its glory. That's can't be solved by just saying, I want you to do this way, or put the garbage liner back in. Eventually it can be. But we need to take a step back and start to think about what type of communication we've been doing with our partners. Is it transactional? You have to do X? Or is it really trying to understand their perspective and where they came from?
Yeah, I think that's a massive one. Like you say, even to go as far as bins, like how much do you need to, when do they get put out? that part of the role of doing the bin is to replenish the liner. And the number of times where Doug would have been, I took the bins out, and you're like, no, that's not the whole thing. But, and that also leads in with the conception, planning and execution, which again I think is so useful. There was a podcast you were on, and this was a couple of years ago, and I played, it was like a clip of you explaining what CPE is to Doug, because he had done the food shop. And he'd just done the food shop. He'd put some stuff in it. He hadn't thought about what was happening that week, who needed packed lunches, what, looking in the cupboard, which is part of that job. And when I kind of explained that whole, and that there's a shopping list and you keep that going through the week, and I'll add to it and you add to it if something runs out, but that's then part of the shopping. And he understood that once we'd explained it. But also I was like, if you dismiss that as part of it, all you're thinking is, I don't know why she's complaining, it's just a shop. So that's part of it, isn't it? To understand that, again, I suppose it's the mental load, but if they don't understand all of those, that is part of it, then they're going to totally miss why that's important. But they're also dismissing what you've been doing for however long.
At that, I couldn't say it better myself. That is the key to fair play, is understanding that the hard part is the conception and planning. The execution is the easy part. And when you break up the conception and planning from the execution, bad things happen. And so it's requiring, I push people to require ownership. Hold the conception, planning, and execution together when you handle a task. You can redeal it. I can do dinner Mondays, you can do dinner Tuesdays. But it means that I'm menu planning. I'm responsible for making sure the groceries are in the refrigerator. I'm not blaming you and reminding you to get me the groceries. It is just a full ownership, and you can redeal it with ownership. Doesn't mean you hold dinners forever. But the goal is, when you're handling that task, whether it's for a morning or day, that you're handling it with full ownership. And I'm sorry that all of a sudden they're like, they must have started like some construction project next door, because all of a sudden I'm like screaming and I don't know what is happening outside my window.
But part of that as well, with the whole thing, is that if that person then fucks up, it's on them to fix it. Because again, I think if we're missing something from the food shop, one of the reasons that would make me so cross would be like, right, now I have to go and fit that into my day. That's an additional thing. So instead of doing this, and this that I was planning to do today, I've got to go and pick up this whatever it was that has been missed off. But you say they have to fix it, because it's almost like, well, that's how you learn.
Well, again, back to the mustard, the things that we care about are not whether the real mustard is being brought home. What we care about is that the home has the two most important things an organization needs to have, and that's accountability and trust. And so that is what we're looking for. You lose and break down accountability and trust when you blame somebody for not reminding you to bring home the right type of mustard, right? And not doing it. So that is what we're looking for. We're looking for accountability and trust as the foundations of the home organization.
We're going to have to wrap up, but in the book, you talk about communication styles, which are really important, because when people say things like, you never do this and you always do this, that's one of them, or when you shut down, which I know is definitely one that I'll go to, if when you've just had enough and you completely detract from any kind of conversation. They're all in there. And again, that's really helpful to understand how you both have that. And also check-ins, which again, so rather than in the moment for giving them the feedback, which might be just shouting and feeling really angry that it's not quite worked yet, that regular check-in where you talk through it, and it's a process. Seeing this is an ongoing process, right? So I think that's really important. But just on that, if you don't mind me asking, you've been doing this now for quite a long time, obviously. Are there things that still trip you and Seth up?
Absolutely. And that is, it's all related to conversation. I mean, as you said, to any sort of conversation we have, my communication style, I keep saying, is a practice. I am the queen of being a verbal assassin. Seth, you've ruined my life. Get the fuck up. Go, you know, I'm not your fucking maid. You know, all I do is continue to, you know, give feedback in the moment. Whereas I know that the way to the fair play practice is having conversations when emotion is low and cognition is high. That is typically how we communicate. But of course, still, the verbal assassin in me comes out, Steph, and it will because it's a practice. Just like there'll be days you don't exercise, and then there's days where you sweat and you're like, wow, I'm so happy I'm back in my rhythm. There are days and weeks where I am not in my rhythm and I don't practice the emotion is low, cognition is high communication style, and I go right back to feedback in the moment. That is a practice for me, for sure.
A massive thank you to Eve for speaking with me. And yeah, I think since recording it, it's already come up a number of times in conversations with Doug and I. There's just so much in there that kind of gives you a slightly different way of thinking about things. But thanks again to the Inditute for sponsoring this episode. They create gift experiences. And if you want to understand more about The Mental Load, as well as Eve's book, you could go back and listen to my episode with Bridget Schulte, who's actually a friend of Eve's, and Laura Danger, who is a facilitator of the Fair Play Method, both excellent guests on the Don't Buy Her Flowers podcast in previous episodes. I should also mention, if you are looking for thoughtful gifts for birthdays or get well, or someone going through a really difficult time, please have a look at my gift company, don'tbuyherflowers.com. And feel free to DM me on Instagram if you've got anything that you want to share about this or just some thoughts. And yeah, share it with your friends. I think it's one of those episodes where you hear it and then you need to talk to your girlfriends about it. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a really good week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.